This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Even though he takes a decidedly old-school approach, it's fair to say that Roy Underhill is on the cutting edge of his profession. Roy is a woodworker who uses hand-powered, handmade tools. And for more than three decades, Roy has hosted the Woodwright Shop on PBS. In fact, it's the longest-running how-to show on public TV. Shows designed to reconnect us with our low-tech past and offer strategies to make everything from a little bookstand to full-size furniture. He's made more than 400 episodes and published 7 books, and he has his own teaching facility in Pittsburgh called the Woodwright School. Roy Underhill joins us in our studio now.
Hey, welcome. Frank. Great to be here.
It is to have you here. Tell us about where the idea for the show came from originally.
Oh, my. It came deep, deep within me. When I was a kid, I just liked making things. And as it carried on, I kept doing that as I got older. And in the 1970s, I was in the Graduate School of Forestry and the Environment at Duke. And the impending ecological problems, global warming, this is 35 years ago. This was just really, really clear that this was going to be a problem at that time. And I had just come back from living way up in the mountains of New Mexico. People would do this homesteading thing, you know, getting off the grid, living on the land back then. Well, the two of those combined, I said off-the-grid technology, appropriate technology, and the environmental issues that industrialization was causing, I just got really interested in it and thinking that these old things, these old technologies, might be something useful for the future. So that's where it came from.
How good were you with those tools? How good were you at woodworking?
About as good as I am now, which is –
that's pretty darn good.
I have a funny reputation. I cut myself a lot, and I say that's because the director, Gary Morton, kept yelling, cut, cut. And I thought he meant something else.
That's not what I meant. So I mean, take me back to those days you said you liked making things because I think all of us were – I mean, so as a little boy, I did too, and I was bad at it, and then I gave up. That's what I do with it. Now, were you good at it a little bit? I mean,
no, I was not as good at it. Still not as good as most. But, you know, I got to say, I bet a lot of the lucky breaks I had were the jobs I didn't get. So I had to keep going back to the thing that I really liked, which was making things and with hand tools.
How did you learn?
I self-taught, really, and worked because a lot of the people who did this, they're long dead.
Right.
And so I have to study technology from the Middle Ages, you know, on up to the mid-19th century for my work. And a lot of it, the tools will teach you. You study the tool marks. So in a sense, it's applied anthropology. You're really trying to decode from the evidence left by our ancestors,
right.
Try and decode that evidence, tool marks and the wear marks on the tools, and figure out how they did it. And often you're wrong, but you keep at it.
What about when you went to the folks at the public TV and said, I've got me an idea?
Yeah, I did, yeah.
How'd that go over?
Well, I had done my presentation at Duke my thesis as a presentation rather than as a written thesis. And so I did it live out in back of the campus there with a big audience, and it went over well. I had hewing logs and doing all this stuff, and somebody said, well, this would work on TV. Mm-hmm. I said, bingo. You know, I bet it would. So I went to UNC TV and said, here, I've got this idea for a show. But it wasn't fully formed. And luckily, you know, I didn't lose hope and didn't get another job. So I came back a year later. And maybe what turned the difference is this time I walked into the production executive's office and I had an axe with me. And maybe that was the persuasive edge. But I did have, and I was sold. I said, this is going to work. I think everybody can relate to this. Everybody had woodworkers in their family. This is just a part of our culture, our deep culture. And yet here's an exotic twist on it. So I thought, just like the French chef, she does cooking. Everybody can relate to that. But Julia Child said, all right, here's French cooking. So it's interesting. Familiar, but a little bit foreign. What a great mix.
Did it catch on right away?
I think so.
Yeah.
We carried on. And this was so long
ago. Because it certainly
has.
Now, you're going into your 32nd season.
This right. We go back to the days of silent television.
Yes.
It's way back.
And then the ideas now for the show, because you've more than 400 episodes now.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But and I guess you don't run out of ideas.
No, and I certainly have a lot of guests. I have wonderful people on the program. Christopher Schwartz this year, Peter Follansbee, Mary May. These are all just artisans at the top of their trade, carvers. Peter Follansbee, he's at Plymouth Plantation as their master joiner. And so I can also draw on all these other folks.
And you mentioned it before, a kind of woodworking anthropology, the sense that you do go back. I think it's one of the things I love is that you can go back and give us these artisans and their prints, their blueprints, and their plans, and take us back to that time when they were designing this stuff. And some of it was kind of cutting-edge technology.
Yeah, it was a different way of working, too, than the industrial way of working. It builds. In other words, it's an emergent process. One piece is made, then you fit the next piece to that, and you fit the next piece to that. And so the actual precision comes out of that emergent process. Mm-hmm. As Peter Follansbee said, measurement is the enemy of precision.
Yeah, I noticed
that. You work in the moment.
I saw you do that, and I thought to myself, well, wait, I thought it was measure twice, cut once. But
no, this guy
says,
don't measure.
I got to open my compass a little more. Didn't quite make it to the end there.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, how do you like that?
Well, that's the way you do it. It's a different way of working, too, and it gives a different character to the work. Master blacksmith Peter Ross, he was with me at Colonial Williamsburg. He speaks about this greatly, how the industrial precision, where you make a whole lot of pieces that all fit any given piece, that system evolved by Eli Whitney, that is a whole different character to the finished item than that emergent process of building.
We make the road by walking.
There you are.
It's wonderful. Tell us about the production process, because here's a big surprise in getting ready for this show. You do this thing in one take. You're live to tape, so that's the show.
One shot. So it's 23 minutes and 27 seconds. I'm looking at that clock and just counting down.
You're making things.
That's right.
You have to know how long it takes to make the thing.
So that's it. You got to get out of there when you got to get out on the second. But it's true. It keeps the cost down, and the show is done, and it keeps the cost down. People have told me from PBS, they says it's cheaper to run the Woodwright shop than it is to run the test pattern. So maybe that's why we've been around.
At least twice as interesting.
I hope so.
It's better than that. So you do the thing in one take. Has that changed over time? Did you do that from the start?
What has changed is that we have to do more shows at a time. So often I'd have it. If I wasn't happy, we could start from the top again and shoot another one to say until we got it to where we liked it. Just again, with the way money's been going, we do two a day.
Yeah.
And if you do two takes on the first show that you've shot that morning, that's taken energy away from the first take of the second show you got to do in the afternoon. So
let's keep that two a day stuff hush hush, shall
we?
Because
it would take
more than a blunt instrument to keep that idea in the minds of our managers. And you've written a number of books, but one of them had not much to do with woodworking, Khrushchev's Shoe.
That was originally entitled by me, Engaging Intelligence, The Minds-On Method to the Aha Moment. So it's about intelligence theory applied to communications and free choice learning. Frank, essentially, it's what you do for a living. That's what that book's about.
How's that?
Well, I was working at Colonial Williamsburg, and it occurred to me that the communication we're doing with the audience there, the people who pay their tickets to come see the people in the short pants whacking on the log. I mean, we're professionals at this. This is a craft, and it should be able to be articulated, taught, and learned, and people should be able to get better at it. And what I found, if you want to make this successful, you create an environment where curiosity is rewarded at every turn. So that's the first thing, you get the environment right. And you're always thinking of work for the audience to do successfully. So always setting up problems for them to solve. That's the essence of engagement.
But that's interesting because it gets back to the process of the woodworking. You talk about this emergent process where you're constantly leading yourself to the next step.
Exactly.
And you're leading your viewers to the same thing. If they're not curious about precisely what you're going to do next, they drop off.
Exactly. And that's why I said with working with the audience, anybody, you got to keep an eye contact and responding to that last moment, exactly what you said about the path. You just create it moment by moment, and you never know where it's going to end up. But if you pay enough attention, it'll get to the right place.
So you've learned a lot about communication and woodworking along the way.
I hope so.
Well, it's a great program. So what about – and you've got your own shop too, so people can come in. Tell us
I
about
do.
That.
Well, we have the school. This is the essence of subversive woodworking. a lot of woodworking schools roundabout, and they're often out in the country, and just because that's the nature of it. It's better. But I knew I wanted – when I came back here was I wanted an old downtown. And we settled in Pittsburgh, an old downtown. Mm. And so I have classes right now. We have a class going on. I'm playing hooky. They're all there working on these wonderful tool chests all dovetailed together. But as they're working there in that shop, my students from California and all over, they're folks from all around, kids walking by, looking in, people always inviting them in. And that's where the subversive work is done. You're getting folks who are not already converted. And they look at this and they see that treadle lathe that we're working on and they say, oh, my God. There was life before electricity. So it's just been a great, great experience.
It's been a great experience talking with you, Roy. Thanks for being on the program.
Thank you, Frank. I sure enjoyed it.
Roy Underhill, host of The Woodwright Shop on PBS since 1979, the author of several books on woodworking, as well as one on the presentation of logic. He owns the Woodwright School in Pittsburgh. You can find out more at woodwrightschool.com. Coming up, more woodworking in the works. We learn the history of mail-order homes in America. On the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.